Hey everyone, before I even start the theme music, I wanted to make sure that I put up a really large content warning on this episode. The book that we're discussing today is almost notorious for its depictions of violence, torture, sexual violence, the prison industrial complex, and racism. We don't go into gory details, but even the broad stroke stuff is really hard. So I completely understand if you take this week off, but I hope you will give it a listen. Thanks again. Greetings and welcome to a new episode of Fuckboys of Literature. I'm your host, Emily Edwards. It's graced dozens of high school reading lists over the years and made one really creepy Stanley Kubrick film, and yet I've managed to go 34 years without even knowing what it's about. A Clockwork Orange is one of those books that appeals to you or absolutely doesn't. When it was suggested by my guest today, I was honestly extremely hesitant, but to be honest, I think I really liked it. Joining me today is comedian Luce Tomlin Brenner. How are you today?
I am doing very well. Thank you for having me.
So before we get started, we should probably do like a really quick summary just in case like people haven't read it or seen the movie.
I think a lot of people haven't read it. A lot of people have seen the movie, but yeah, Alice, we'll discuss. It's a totally different.
It's a completely different beast. It's completely different. So basically it takes in like the not too distant future.
Yeah, I think it's actually supposed to be now times.
Yikes! Because it was written in, what, the 60s?
62, I think.
And so it's like the distant-ish future for 1962 in this, quote, alternative universe, alternative England, where, like, go figure, like, people are super ultra-violent, and that's just, like, the pastime of teenagers.
Yeah, and everybody is really poor and basically works in factories, and crime is running the streets.
So, you know, completely different to what we're in right now.
Not at all the universe we're in.
Yeah, and so the main character, Alex, which, again, I didn't realize is 15 in the book.
Yeah, because Malcolm McDowell plays him in the movie and definitely looks like 20.
Yeah, like he's definitely older. He's like post-puberty, whereas Alex is definitely like a teenager.
Yeah.
And so he just goes around like screwing people and
Beating people up. A gang of droogs. Yeah. His gang that he hangs with.
And then just kind of he volunteers to be cured.
Well, yeah. So he gets arrested because he accidentally murders somebody when he breaks into their home.
Yeah, he accidentally murders a little old lady.
Yeah, and then he's in jail for 2 years, and then there's this experimental program that can cure
violent impulses, we'll
say. That's a good way of saying it. And then it works, but the whole thing behind it is, what is it if somebody doesn't choose to be good?
Yeah.
And they're just being good because they're being forced to. And if you don't have a choice, like, what are the ethical implications of that?
Exactly. And so you mentioned that you had read this in high school.
Yes. This was, my parents are really into film. And this, when I was growing up, my dad would talk about A Clockwork Orange as being like one of the most upsetting movies that he ever saw.
Yeah. My mom said the same thing.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. And they would say like they couldn't hear Singing in the Rain without thinking of like
exactly what my mother said too. And she goes, it was my favorite song and you know, my favorite movie, and now I can't listen to it because it's basically a scene of sexual assault
and like beating
people. This is like a big like content warning show, guys. Like sometimes, you know, we can do things a little bit lighter, but A Clockwork Orange is just heads up there, it's gonna be bad.
No like gory details, but like we definitely, there's a lot of rape in the book, so we'll be mentioning it.
Yeah.
And so that always stuck with me because as a child, I was always very fascinated by the things you're not supposed to see as
child.
Like I was always drawn to the horror video section because all the covers were so gruesome and intriguing and like how much they terrified me. I had to know what was
exactly
about. And so when I would hear things like that from my parents, it was just like, God, I can't wait to like see what
and
this movie's
I remember
so crazy.
Seeing stills of it when I was a kid too, and the production design, like all Kubrick films, is just so interesting and I had never seen anything like that before.
Yeah.
And so I was always like really drawn to it, but as soon as I heard that there was like really graphic scenes of sexual assault, I was like, I'm going to save my brain and not engage in this, basically.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. What I will say about the movie, I think the book's a lot more violent. The movie actually, Kubrick does a good job. The whole movie feels very dreamlike.
Gotcha.
And it's interesting because it was made in the 70s. So while it's about this future, mm-hmm. all of the design is still very much inspired of the time. And
it
there's
like the San Francisco International Airport.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of psychedelic colors and kind of like that a loopy, bubbly writing.
Gotcha.
And long, long hair, bright blue eyeshadow. Like, and so everything looks like it is of the future while also being very much of the 70s.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's very...
It's dream-like. Tempered by our sort of like modern aesthetics of what violence is supposed to look like.
Yeah, and they don't really, it's very implied. There are a lot of boobs and I think there's some bush in it also, but you don't actually see like, it's not like when you see a rape scene now that you're avoiding in a movie.
It's not like Game of Thrones where it's like there.
Yeah, it's all very like, whimsical's kind of a generous word, but it has like a whimsy to it.
Interesting.
Where it feels like it's not, I get triggered pretty easily for that kind of thing. And that movie's never bothered me because it feels very unrealistic. Yeah. The book, however,
I was
very shocked by the fact that there, before he murders an older woman, he rapes 2 10-year-olds.
Yeah, he does.
And that was not, I had no memory of
and
that.
And he's very specific about their ages, too.
Yeah, because even when you're, he's 15, but even when you're 15, like, that's a very...
That's a noticeable age difference. Like, I feel like between, like, late elementary school and high school, like,
totally
every
different.
Grade is a different maturity point.
Yeah.
And so for a 15-year-old to turn
like,
around...
even look at a 10-year-old,
exactly.
Like, not sex their children.
They are children when you're 15.
And so that was extremely jarring. And I think one of the things, did you read the foreword in your cut from Anthony Burgess, who's the writer of A Clockwork Orange? I don't know if yours has.
I don't think I have it.
Mine has an introduction for it. And it's funny because he seems pretty insufferable as an author. He talks about how he doesn't really like A Clockwork Orange, but it's the thing that has stuck around because of the movie.
Fuck those guys. Those guys who are just like, oh, my mansion on a hill was built because of this one book, so I resent it.
Yes, exactly. And the way he writes is very, the whole, I will say, I think the whole book is very funny. I really like his writing style a lot. And I when I was reading it again, I was reminded of how much I liked it because the writing is so funny, but the whole thing is so cockney.
Yes.
And I found myself reading in my head in like a cockney accent.
Like, truth be told, I had no idea that it's basically written in like another language.
Yes.
And so I picked it up and I was like, holy shit. Like, it felt very like Jabberwocky, like Lewis Carroll to me.
Definitely.
And I read it almost sing-songy, like, you know, like the Jabberwocky poem. And I'm like, this really... First of all, the hubris to write something in like
made up language,
in a completely made up language, is just out of this world levels of like fuckboy mid-century male writer thing to do.
Yeah. Like, aren't I so interesting?
Yeah, I made my own language. Like, no, that's usually a sign that you're a little unhinged. Like, And so when I was reading it, though, like, it did make it more childish to me that he was speaking in slang that like adults even in the book didn't understand.
Yeah, and it's called NADSAT.
Yeah.
Is like the language, and because it's also teens at that time are called NADSATs. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting to read it. When I first read it, did not have the internet. So I was I was just trying to figure things out by being a smart person and using context clues.
Yeah.
Like reading used to be like. And this time I was like, I'm just trying to bang this book out. I've read it a couple times before and I pulled up the like dictionary on Wikipedia.
Yeah, of like what means what.
Yeah, because I was like, I just want to know like quickly what this is. And then halfway through the book, I realized I didn't really need it anymore. And you fall into the world. I love the way that the language pulls you into.
Yeah, it works phenomenally well.
And I will say, I do think that separates the scenes that are really violent. Mm-hmm. It's like, in a way, it makes it more shocking because in this sing-song childlike voice, all of a sudden, some of these made-up words you realize are very violent words.
Yes, exactly.
And so then it like shocks you out of it because you're like, this isn't a big, oh, they're breaking into a house, but they, but it's he treats everything like a game. Mm-hmm. So it feels very much like this isn't a big deal. And all of a sudden, especially like when he murders this old woman,
yeah.
But almost the whole sentence is in a different language.
It is.
So I didn't realize that she was dead for like another chapter. And then I was like, oh my God,
shit.
The gravity of like the situation.
Yeah. That it was just fun and games. It was like how most kids would like go to the movies when I was 15. He breaks into houses, and because she's like fighting back, he hits her in the head with something. And then in the next chapter, he goes, I guess I did it a little too hard. Like, she's dead now.
Yeah.
It's very video game aspect of it.
Yeah, which is interesting because it's decades before video games. And I like that a lot because it puts you both in the head of the protagonist, because it's all written from Alex, the main character's mm-hmm. perspective. It puts you in his head where you relate to him and you're not trying to. Yeah. The whole time I just kept trying to put space between me and him.
Same here.
And it works really hard to draw you in, especially like towards the end when he's getting his rehabilitation. He starts, once he's in jail, he starts mm-hmm. calling. He's, you know, his friends basically like gave him up.
Yeah.
He's all on his own, and his parents kind of disavowed him. Mm-hmm. And he starts calling you his friend.
Yeah.
It switches.
Yeah. He starts calling himself like your humble narrator or something mm-hmm. like that. Like, he knows he's talking to someone, and it really pulls you in that you're like, this boy is confiding in you.
Yeah.
Especially now being much older than he is. And I'm just thinking, you know, it also changes the perspective of, I can imagine like when you're, you know, in high school and you're the same age as this kid, you're like, why would you be doing it? It's either like enthralling because mm-hmm. it's something that you would never consider doing. It's like knowing the bad kid.
Yes. Yes. That's exactly what I remember it feeling like. It's like almost titillating.
Yeah.
I think it's like, I think too, at that age, it really made me think a lot about men in our society, because I was thinking about how at 17, I didn't know that much about sexual assault. I knew that it was a terrible thing.
Yeah.
But I'd mostly seen it in movies, and it felt very distant. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a bad thing that bad people do.
Yeah.
And so in a book, when I first read it, I was like, this is bad because he's a bad person.
Yeah.
But it didn't have any deeper emotional. It was the same as him hitting people in the street.
Yeah, exactly. Or like kicking a dog or something like that. It's just like
the
markers of a bad person.
Yes, exactly. And reading it this time as an adult woman and then being like 10,
a 10-year-old girl,
it was so sick.
And also
sick.
For an adult male author to make that age choice.
So when we first brought it up, that's what I was going to say, because he says in the introduction that like you make, so he says, my own healthy inheritance of original sin comes out in this book as I enjoyed raping and ripping by proxy. It's the novelist's innate cowardice that makes him depute to imaginary personalities the sins that he is too cautious to commit himself.
Okay, so I've written a couple books. They haven't been formally published. I self-published a couple, and I'm trying to get another one published now. The thing is like my main characters, they don't do bad things because I would never do bad things. I want them to be like heroic and smart and charming. Like,
yeah.
If I'm like creating a fiction, like the fictional person that I want to be is just like, you know,
a better version of even yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Why on earth would you choose two 10-year-olds?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And like,
as like the victims of this boy's crime.
Right. And like, if he does terrible things throughout. So it's, I'm not even saying that there shouldn't be rape in the book. I think for the story, it does serve a purpose. But they couldn't be his age.
Yeah, exactly.
They couldn't be 15.
They couldn't have been classmates of his.
Yeah.
You know, they had to be that much noticeably younger.
And it just, and then we talk about like the 60s and, you know, what it means to be of that time. And mm-hmm. I try to place it alongside Mad Men.
Yeah.
And think about like what we learn from like that mm-hmm. storytelling. And it's just like people, this is a very revered author.
Yeah.
Who was thought of as like a genius.
This is a classic that's taught in schools as though it's just as good as like Huck Finn or the Scarlet
Little Women.
Letter. Yeah. And Little Women.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's so wild to me that it's like, this guy sucks.
Yeah.
Like,
I know.
And like, this is an interesting book, and I really like the ethical conundrum within. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of interesting things that can be used today. And I would say that I think it's an important book.
Yeah, I would too.
But I think it's fascinating that this person who wrote it seems to have enjoyed the most disgusting parts of
it. Yeah, I completely agree.
And wasn't choosing it to be horrific as much as it was to be titillating.
Yeah.
Which I'm just like, well, then where do you fall in line? Are you the state or are you Alex in this book?
I feel like in the 1960s, these kinds of crimes and these kinds of like behavior were written out about to be titillating. Like when you watch like Mindhunter and see how people like reacted to like serial killers and stuff like that, it was always like, he's so like sexy, isn't it alluring? And it's like, no, it's not fucking alluring. This is terrifying.
Yeah.
And now, at least in like the late aughts, or I guess whatever you call our or this decade now, like, we can comprehend that like bad people, you don't want to like revere them in a lot, hopefully.
Well, and that like, and that rape isn't the same crime as murder. And that a lot of very normal, regular people rape.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that that's something that now, reading it again, I was like very interested in how people, and this is where I was like thinking about like a male mindset, where I think what's been really hard during our culture now, where people are able to talk about the things that have happened to them. And there's been this like very frustrating pushback from straight men who've never thought about the issue before, because I think that they're grown up with this idea that like raping and murdering are these things that are like only the worst people do them.
Exactly.
When it's actually a much more commonplace thing that
it's
regular people do.
In the book of like, he skips school one day. So what does he do? He goes and
to
like,
the record store.
Goes to the record store and picks up two basically small girls in order to assault them.
Yeah.
And then after he's done and they're like crying, he's just like, okay, bye, and leaves late and waves them goodbye like it was a play date.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And I think that that's definitely, that seemed crazy to me then. And now I actually felt like it was a more realistic part of the book.
Completely agree. I completely agree.
Yeah. And so I really, I think it's interesting because I feel like there was no shame in him writing this at that time period. And now there's like a lot of shame around that kind of thing, in that we are like, this is the worst thing that could happen. Only the worst people would do this. And so then we don't talk about like how this is just, it is terrible, but it is like a commonplace thing.
It is just,
and we can't like learn to really deal with sexual assault until we try to take the good and the bad out of it and try to understand it as like this gray issue that good people are capable of doing these bad things. And it's one of the things I love about this book, is that he's presented as the worst person, but then we also know that he's smart and that he's charming and that he makes
cultured,
like, loves Mozart,
classical
and Beethoven
music, and it's moved to both orgasm and tears while listening to it.
And he's funny.
Charming.
So and it's really interesting to be charmed by a book character. I think when you cannot see anything. And you're
they don't
just
really
like,
describe his physicality at any point.
No.
Yeah.
And it, the amount of times I had to keep being like, he's gross.
Yeah, he's disgusting.
And like, the amount of times I kept getting drawn back in and like feeling for him, it was just, it felt so real as to the kinds of things now where you think about the comedians that are like, oh, yeah, they're so charming. They make us feel so good. They've done these terrible things. And it's like that whirl of charm is it.
Like, I remember when I was doing my Game of Thrones episode, I tried to, like, we tried to talk about, like, the truly reprehensible characters. And that show, or that representation in the books, they draw hard and clear lines of, like, this person's a bad person. Like, you know, they're the killer, they're the rapist, they're, like, the people who are going for power. And they really, it is very black and white.
Good and evil.
Exactly. And then compared to the murderer and the rapist in A Clockwork Orange, where, like you said, like, you're drawn to them. Like, in the world, this seems like a totally normal and acceptable thing for a fit. Because you're not even presented with 15-year-old kids who do the alternative.
No, we don't. Yeah. And all the adults are stodgy morons.
Yeah.
Like, you get, you're like, oh, God, these are all people who are, like, down on their luck. They're drunks. They're corrupt police officers. like nobody seems really good. So
his parents are completely absentee.
Checked out.
Yeah. He's
really
been
sad.
Out, like raping and murdering, and then comes home. And then he's like, "Mom, where's my dinner?" She's like, "I left it for you on the table. I'm going to bed. Good night." Like, she doesn't care where her 15-year-old son was. The dad's already asleep, and they take sleeping pills to sleep through it all.
Oh, yeah. So that he can listen to his music at whatever volume he wishes.
Exactly. They just have no comprehension. And like modern 15-year-old would never be written about in that sort of detachment either.
Yeah, exactly. But that feels a lot more, I think when I was reading it, I was like, yeah, this feels real. Because I remember thinking that every adult was a fucking idiot when I was that age.
Yeah.
And so despite him doing the bad things, I was like, yeah, fuck the government and the police and all of these people. And like, still fuck the police. But like...
Yeah. Slightly different reasons.
Different reasons for sure, yeah.
Actually the same if you think about like in one point, like he is... apprehended by the police officers and they take him to the outskirts of town and beat the living shit out of him. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, no, okay. So it's always the same.
It's similar. Oh, yeah.
Great. That never changes.
And we'll be back right after this.
I guess there's no getting around the fact that we have to talk about the fact that when it was originally published in America, they left out the last chapter.
Yeah, this is the most fascinating part about this book,
which
I
didn't know until I read like the Wikipedia article about the book, like after I had finished it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Interesting. This copy that I have has like the foreword in it about it.
Okay.
And I had read about it because I had, I was just so fascinated by it when I was a teenager.
So it was it was originally published in Britain.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it was brought over to America, the last chapter is essentially Alex going through a metamorphosis and deciding he doesn't want to be a terrible person anymore, essentially.
Well, the important thing is like the cure. So the cure to his violence is that they force him to watch the most horrific violent films.
Which is interesting that when he describes them, he doesn't use slang when he's talking about the violent films.
Yes, I noticed that too. And that violence was much harder to read.
Yeah.
I skipped over parts of it that was talking about like torture, like war crimes and Nazi crimes and stuff. I was just like, oh, this is stomach churning. But you're right. Yeah, it's because there is no slang in it. And they, you know, you've probably seen the images. They're really famous, even if you haven't seen the movie, of his eyelids
being
pulled open. And they also play classical music.
Yes.
And he's been given a shot that makes him sick.
Mm-hmm.
So while he sees these images, they make him sick and essentially just traditional conditioning until he gets sick anytime he sees or thinks about violence.
Yes.
And then he's cured to go back into the world. But then at that point, he's not able to defend himself when things happen to him. And he basically can't really live in the world. He's good, but he's not making the choice to be good.
Yeah.
And eventually, like, throws himself out a window and almost kills himself.
Yeah.
And that's when the state realizes that, like
this conditioning program isn't really the solution.
Yeah.
And they, like, it also kind of, like, knocks something loose in him that he goes back to being a violent person for a little while after he tries to kill himself.
And that's where the American book ends, is that it's like, you know what? They've, like, deconditioned him. He's going back to his violent self. And then... because that's where the book ends in America, that's Stanley Kubrick based the whole story on that. So A Clockwork Orange, the movie, ends the same way the original American publishing ends, with him saying, "I'm cured, all right." And it's this very nihilistic.
Yeah, like truly like sinister, snake-like, animalistic response to just like going back to being what your nature is.
Yeah, and that's essentially, and the government is like, this is fine.
Exactly.
And he's like, this is great. And you know, it's just,
you
he's
can't
a bad
hope for
person.
Anything better. Way
exactly.
to go, America. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly. And it's like a hard bummer. And people were really upset when the movie came out, because everywhere else in the world, there's another chapter where after he tries going back to his violent ways, he gets bored by it. And he runs into one of his old friends who's now married.
And has a kid.
Yeah. And
he's
like,
he goes, wait, that's an option, basically. He didn't realize that it was a choice.
Exactly. And he's 18.
Yeah.
At that point.
He's
so you realize it's like 3 years of him going back and forth from this like unformed kind of poisoned brain.
Yeah, exactly.
To then becoming an adult. Well, the very edges of adulthood.
Yeah, exactly.
And seeing that he could have a nice life and that it's not so bad, and what he kind of viewed as very pathetic and what you were seeing the whole time isn't actually.
Yeah.
It's like, can be nice and comforting.
Yeah.
And then it ends with him realizing that, like, what he engaged in were like follies of his youth, putting it mildly sure, because many teenagers are not like that.
Yeah. But I guess it's interesting because like we're not given teenagers that do the alternative.
Mm-hmm.
In this world of A Clockwork Orange, like it seems as though all teenagers are these sort of like, quote, like delinquent teenagers.
Yeah, in gangs.
Yeah, exactly.
And doing drugs, and, and they have all kinds of fake drugs that are
like, exactly.
And
like the alcohol. Synthesized drugs, because they don't have alcohol. So they drink it in milk.
Right.
Which is like a fantastic visual to think of, like a whole bunch of kids just like
drinking drugged milk.
Yeah, exactly.
Milk with knives in it, which I really liked that description a lot.
It's brilliant, the world that it's built in.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes you feel as though that the things that Alex are doing is like actually not that bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's masterful.
I agree.
I can't imagine having to I don't believe that every story has to have a happy ending.
I agree. Yeah.
But I can't imagine how, like, unfulfilling it would be to just read a book where this character doesn't change.
I don't think that that's a story.
Yeah.
Because then it's like, well, what's the point? I guess the fact is that you do need to choose one or the other.
Yeah.
And that a choice to be evil is better than no choice and being forced to be good.
Right.
Because, like, who are you? Are you a good person? If that's the question to ask. If you're a good person because you're being forced to be good, are you a good person?
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, from the state perspective, it's like, well, you're making a better community because you're not committing violence.
Right. Well, the most interesting thing that they said in the book was that they are committed to doing this, treatment in order to make him less violent because the prisons are overcrowded.
Yes, which is 100% where we're at.
And that's the main reason that they give is that like it's just too expensive to keep, you know, people who are committing crimes in prison.
Yes.
That's it.
Yes, exactly. And there's a part that I really love when he's still, and Alex is in prison and it's right before he's about to leave to be in this new program.
Mm-hmm.
And he has like a pretty good relationship with the prison chaplain. The minister.
Which I love that he called him Charlie.
I know.
And it took me a little while to figure that one out.
I know. No, that's what the book does really well, is like very sly references that don't over-explain or wink at all. That makes it feel very real also. But it's a point where he says, it may not be nice to be good. It may be horrible to be good. And when I say that to you, I realize how self-contradictory it sounds. And it goes into like, what does God want? Does God want goodness or the choice of goodness? And I really loved that idea a lot. And I think that that's something that's applicable to all times, all worlds.
Oh, completely.
And since we are facing, I think, one of the worst times in the history of the prison system.
Yeah,
other than like maybe when it was just always forced torture and labor.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think we're pretty close to that because we are essentially throwing people into a place where they are raped and beaten and there's no rehabilitation and everybody's okay with it because
there's
no
choice of them getting out.
Yeah, and because they're bad, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And I believe very deeply in rehabilitation for everybody.
Yeah.
I do know that there are some people who are, you know, either psychotic or sociopathic who maybe don't have that option later in life, that maybe for the safety they need to be locked up. But I don't think that they should also be raped and abused.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think that's a moral failing of our society, that we've just decided that it's okay that some people hurt because they've hurt people.
I
really like it's, and I thought about that consistently, like without fail, while I was reading this book. And I really think that this feels realistic, like a thing that people would be like, yes, it would be good if people were just good.
Yeah, if they were just forced and tortured in order to get the outcome that I want.
Mm-hmm.
And it's...
And I think it's really interesting that at the end, when he's like, I don't know, I guess this is me now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, yeah, because your brain is growing.
Yeah.
And like we have so many, and we see this especially with men of color, black men, black children, black teenagers who are tried as adults for things like holding up a grocery store.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you kill somebody during a holdup when you're 14 or 15, you did the wrong thing.
Yes.
That person doesn't deserve to be dead. You should not have taken their life. this is a whole family that lost somebody because of your bad choice.
Exactly.
But just saying that that person is an evil person who then has to be locked away for life because of something they did their child is ignoring.
Yeah, because not even a quarter of their life has passed.
Exactly. And it's ignoring their whole...
Yeah, an ecosystem.
Exactly. Yeah. And like what kind of a desperate place you have to be in or to do something like that, which I think is what's really interesting about this book is we immediately see how desperate the world is because everybody is acting
everybody
like this.
Everybody's starving. And it says at even some point that like every adult is forced to work. And, you know,
until they die.
Until they die. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so this and it's, sort of like bleak, bleak, hopeless future that
creates these kids where everybody, instead of now where it's like, I think we're slowly shuttling towards that, but now we still are able to have these desperate universes of like the very, very rich in their small pockets and the very, very poor in their small pockets, where in those poor areas are a lot like the world of this book. And
also, like, having no barometer of what is acceptable or unacceptable forms of pleasure.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah.
Which is, like, so ingrained in this book is that Alex takes extreme, if not strange, pleasure in classical music or, like, what we would probably consider, like, aberrant pleasure in classical music.
Definitely.
But he at least finds pleasure in something that's not hurting someone, whereas all the other teenagers that are in the book, because we're really not given any female teenagers whatsoever, and we're only given
only as victims,
and then we're given like a handful of, you know, male teenagers that we're interacting with, but they all only find pleasure in hurting someone. And then it doesn't seem as though the adults that are alive have any sort of hobbies or pleasures or anything like that.
Exactly.
So if all you're reduced to and all you're given access to is, you know, the most extreme forms of satisfying, you know, your brain urges, how can you figure out what the barometers are or like the goalposts are for actual appropriate happiness?
That's so well put. Really, truly so well put, because, and even some of the adults make fun of his love for music.
Yeah, they do.
Also, and so, and the way that he combines, like we were talking about music and sex, where it's like, there is no, these bleed into each other, where now, where we're sitting, we can be like, well, music's fine, but maybe not the 10-year-old children, you know? But there, it feels more realistic for that world that that is fine, and that the moral good and the moral bad only exists to, if you commit crimes, you get thrown in jail.
And that's if you get caught. And like half the time they aren't.
And the police are extremely corrupt.
Yeah.
And there's no blurred line like there is now.
Yeah.
It's like, no, they just also beat people
up. Yeah, exactly.
And, or they don't give a shit at all.
Yeah.
But there's no guys to helping the community.
No, none.
Or,
like, and it feels very, you know, indicative of parts of society that I am very privileged to not be a part of. That I can have, you know, like material pleasures. Like I have a nice house, you know, I can eat good food, I can drink wine because I can afford it and things like that. Whereas if the only access to pleasure that you have is literally like subsistence, where you're like, I am happy because I managed to like steal food today, or I'm thrilled with myself because I hurt a person who was going to hurt me and I got away.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
That feels like the world of A Clockwork Orange and also parts of society that like
we're 100% living in
currently exist that run concurrent to like my very privileged life here in Los Angeles.
Yeah, absolutely. And then when you think about Alex doesn't have any, his parents are disengaged, as we've talked about. And a lot of kids who grow up committing these types of crime as children are either for one reason or another, if their parent is just working constantly because they have to, or they're also in jail, or for many systematic oppressive reasons, they don't have the same kind of parenting that people who aren't committing crimes in their teens. And of course, there's always like, you know, school shooters who are just...
Yeah, exactly. Who might have led a life of privilege, but...
Are low-key
exactly
psychotic and sexist and racist. But like, that's a much smaller... population than what we see, as I was talking about, when people, young boys of color, commit crimes and then are thrown into jail for life.
Exactly.
And there's this idea that like they've committed the crimes of men, where it's like,
it's a baby. It's a child.
Exactly.
One thing that happened during this that actually, like, I found myself, like, mentally grappling with was when Alex is finally arrested. Basically, he's done all of these terrible things that I am an adult and I know that they are terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And then he essentially has a parole officer
mm-hmm.
who comes to see him after he's been arrested, and the parole officer spits in his face.
Yeah.
And Alex is just, he's hurt mm-hmm. that this man that had been trying to make him better, quote, better and failed, but yeah. like spits in his face and basically says, like, I've given up on you, throw him in jail.
Yeah, society has given up on you. There's nothing anyone can do yeah. for you. But when you're like, this is a 15-year-old, mm-hmm. that's crazy, because when you meet him earlier on, before Alex is even in jail, he's disengaged.
Yeah.
And he's just like, are you going to be good or not?
Yeah.
He's not giving him any type of, there's no role model.
Nope, there's no constructive action to do, you know, like stepping stones to build yourself up to be a, you know, quote, like, productive member of society. Like,
right.
it's just simply like turn on, turn off.
Mm-hmm.
And then if he doesn't choose correctly with no skills or no building blocks or no tools,
yeah.
he gets his face spat in.
Yeah. And that just felt very, realistic.
Yeah.
Because there's just certain people that I think our society gives up on.
Yeah.
Because if you have had the privilege of, parents mm-hmm. and people modeling behaviors for
exactly.
you, living in a neighborhood where you're mm-hmm. safe.
And given the structure in order to be, you know, like,
yeah, seeing that path
safe.
Forward.
Exactly.
Yeah, then you, of course, are like, well, I made the choice to be good.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, nobody...
I grew up a white girl in suburban Connecticut. Really only had so many choices.
Yeah, like,
you know?
You could have gone nuts, right?
Yeah.
Like, you could have just decided to be, like, a total outlaw and,
yeah,
like, rob
exactly.
a bank, because people can make
but
that choice. But, like,
the structure was there to prop me up every single step of the way.
Exactly. And you probably had parents that, like, if you slipped up, they were going to be on you.
Absolutely.
And be like, listen,
yeah, exactly.
we're going to turn this around
there
for you.
There was no being late for curfew or, like, if I ever wanted to go out again. Like, it was
exactly.
just...
Oh, I was grounded for entire semesters of
yeah,
school
exactly.
if I came home 20 or 15 minutes late.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was just like, and that in a way is a privilege to have somebody caring
about
where you.
You
are.
Yeah.
And being like, and my parents were like, we're not going to help you with college.
Yeah.
And I wanted to go to college because that was modeled for me.
Exactly.
And I was like, oh, I'll get to have a better life yeah. if I'm in college.
The concept of a future
mm-hmm.
is a privilege in and of itself.
Absolutely. And there's no future in A Clockwork Orange.
None.
And there's no, I think it's hard for many children across our country to see what the future is, especially in a society now where so many of our jobs are becoming automated.
Yeah.
And you have to have a lot of money to
yeah.
get into certain programs to even learn about things. Like, how are you going to become a programmer?
Exactly.
Like,
you can't afford to go to, like, even you're not going to get anywhere with a community college degree with a lot of different degrees.
Yeah,
you know.
And in many states in the country, too. Like,
yeah.
if you're just, like, in South Dakota,
yeah,
like,
exactly.
leaving South Dakota is... It was hard to leave Ohio.
Yeah, I know.
Like, I was in the middle... Not in the middle of nowhere, but, like, the dream... I'd always dreamed of moving to L.A., and it felt impossible.
Yeah, it felt, like, completely outside of the realm of possibility.
Yeah.
And then to even think about how A Clockwork Orange, like you mentioned... It takes place in the span of like 3 years.
Which is very crazy.
It's very short.
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling to think of the difference between being 15 and 18.
But it is a huge difference.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean,
not
you
that
do.
I'm in my 30s, 3 years is like a sneeze. It doesn't
yeah.
really matter. But like.
Yeah. But even think about like 18 to 23, like
yeah.
going into college, graduating from
mm-hmm.
college.
And all like, the rights and responsibilities that you're allowed to have.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was first starting, like reading this, I was like, I can't see myself empathizing with Alex at all. Like, all I had known was that, like, essentially he's a rapist and a murderer, and
mm-hmm.
that's what the book is about. And then to see the pressures on him change him over the course of 3 years,
yeah.
I was like, oh, he's not just like this glorified villain character.
Mm-hmm.
He's frankly, he's a fuckboy who's trying to change.
Yeah.
And most of the time in previous episodes, like we had said, like, you can't really. Like,
yeah.
You know,
once a fuckboy, always a fuckboy.
Once a fuckboy, always a fuckboy. And it's hard to, you know, contextualize someone who's a rapist and a murderer as
mm-hmm.
just like something as lighthearted as using the word fuckboy.
Yeah.
But I think he honestly is, because
mm-hmm.
the magnitude and the gravity of those behaviors are diminished in this, you know, universe that he's set in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's interesting that while he has nothing, he's able to go through, he does terrible things, he's able to go through those terrible things that are done to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's able to compare those things, look ahead, and build an idea for a future for himself with nothing around him modeling or showing the way except for running into his friend.
Yeah.
And the same way.
Yeah. Which I think is astounding in a book that doesn't have any characters of massive privilege.
Yeah.
It's something that you can only draw in from like your own real life experiences, because everybody in A Clockwork Orange is poor and lost.
Yeah. And even the government doesn't seem that bougie.
Yeah. I know. It seems like, you know, quite frankly, modern American government, where it's like their only concern is the bottom line.
Yeah, bureaucratic.
Yeah, exactly. And
stiff
doing the right
milk
paperwork.
Toast. Yeah.
Exactly. And so it's strange that, like, I think it's fantastic, rather, that you can read this as a person who's from, like, middle-class upbringing and see just, like, the world of the poor and lost and essentially hopeless, and be able to compare it to, you know, the people who have nothing but bright futures, but are also like, they don't have empathy or sympathy or normal human, what we would consider normal human reactions to suffering.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you think about somebody like that, like what if, you know, Alex had nothing but money and a home and stuff to go back to, would he have made?
Yeah. Like what if Betsy DeVos was his mom?
Like, yeah.
Would he have been a different, better person who didn't commit these crimes?
I don't think so. And I also think that there wouldn't have even needed to be a cure, because he could have just kept being awful, and that would have been the protection.
Yeah.
So without even having his brain tinkered with, it's tinkered with through privilege.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how little having choice. I think we make it like, well, I did this, so you can do it. The pull yourself up by the bootstraps flawed mentality of our American society is like, I think the more critically you look at systems of oppression and wealth, that you see how little choice people have day to day. It's like really just trying to get by.
Yeah.
And I think the book does like a really incredible job of being like, yeah, he definitely made choices to beat the shit out of old people that did not deserve it.
Exactly. He made some of the most reprehensible choices that a human being
can make. But then you realize that everybody's kind of doing that.
Yeah.
And like his mom and dad talk about never going out, leaving the house after work because they can't be on the streets because of gangs of boys roaming. And it's like, oh, he's doing what everybody is doing. And like, this is the world. So then to come from that world and actively make the choice that like, oh, I don't have to be like that anymore.
And like one of his former droogs, just he runs into him like at a bar essentially and says like, you know, by the way, this is an option. Of just like having, you know, getting married, which, you know, it's a very 1960s mid-century concept of a good life.
Yeah, wife and a child.
Exactly. And having like a good job and things like that.
And these are white characters also.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't know, I guess.
Yeah, it never specifically says.
I think I'm basing it on the movie and in the movie where everyone is white.
But I think we can make the assumption that a white man in the 1960s in Britain is not writing about people who are different from him.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that was my assumption of it. And then based in like the film, I don't think there's any people of color
in it. Which, you know, I'm not sure if I would want to see a representation of Alex as a boy of color, because I think that that would make assumptions about people of it would be a commentary about people of color and not, you know, we just kind of get into like the white is default.
Yeah.
You know, but I think we are not past the representations of like, if you made Alex black, it would be about black people.
Yeah, no, I agree. Whereas I do think his members of his gang could be, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, you know, I mean, this is going back to like the movie, but how interesting that...
I don't think we can discuss things that have been turned into movies like separate.
Yeah, I know, because they're woven together, especially because I think more people have seen the movie.
Yeah.
It was up for a Best Picture nomination. Yeah. It lost to The French Connection, I believe.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, no, that's it. I think it's important. But how crazy is it that in the wildest future, where anything is possible, everyone's still white?
Yeah.
Like, that you can't even in the 60s, you can't even conceive of, like, a future where there would be more different types of people.
It's strange that, like, in the 60s, when people are first starting to talk about, like, the equality amongst, like, black and white people, and in Britain you also have, you know, like, Indian people or, you know, things like that.
Right.
Because their history of colonialism. Like, even in a world where the best you can hope for is to be a petty criminal that doesn't get caught, like my people who are not white can't even be included in that narrative.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, you're not even as good of criminals as white boys.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
it's
exactly.
Dripping.
Yeah.
Just by the omission, it makes it more racist than you would expect it to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's just like, what is this world that you live in?
Yeah.
It's like, it's just like, you know, girls in Sex and the City not having
yeah.
any. We're in New York and
yeah,
there aren't
exactly.
any people of color.
Well, and it's funny, too, because, like, a lot of. This is going to probably go way off topic, but what the hell? Like, you know how white supremacists on Twitter, they make, like, drinking milk, like, an aspect of, like, white supremacy? Because, like, you
really?
Don't know about this?
I
oh
did
my
not
God. Okay.
know about this.
Or maybe I've been exposed to super weird bowels of the internet.
Well,
but,
I mean, like, I have, but I try to avoid some
like,
of the Nazis.
Apparently, the rhetoric is, and I do not believe this, obviously, I'm not a terrible person, but, like... Apparently, their excuse is that, like, only people of European descent maintain the enzyme to digest milk. So if you are not of European descent, you're more likely to be lactose intolerant. So drinking milk is literally a sign for these psychos of
oh
being...
God. I'm, like, tearing my skin off of
I'm
my
so
face
sorry
right now.
I'm like, bringing this to your attention. But, like, they literally use, like, drinking milk as a sign of being, like... you know, like, racially superior.
It's just, like, it's crazy how good they are at writing satire and remaining humorless.
Yeah.
Like, I just can't, like, what a great SNL sketch that would have been.
Right.
You
and then to, like,
fucking
start
dumbasses.
This where you have, like, a bunch of white delinquents sitting in a milk bar literally drinking milk.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, fuck you people. You literally are trying to make A Clockwork Orange, like, reality.
Well, and I think I was talking to my partner about this. I think A Clockwork Orange falls into the same unfortunate fate that Fight Club falls into,
mm-hmm.
and many other books, but for some reason,
yeah, those
that's
two
the
stick
one
out.
That stick out. Or like The Rules of Attraction or American Psycho.
Oh, absolutely.
Men and shitty men are the loudest population
yeah,
group
in the world.
Yeah.
yeah.
Then we see these and we're like, ugh, gross, Fight Club. Ugh,
yeah.
Clockwork Orange, such fucking dumb. And it's like, they're not dumb. Like,
no.
Fight Club is an incredible anti-capitalist story
yeah.
about blowing up credit card buildings
exactly.
and freeing yourself from consumerism
yeah.
like and toxic masculinity.
Yeah,
it's brilliant. But people are like, ew, boys fighting?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's making fun of that.
Yeah.
But it's so hard that it's so sad to see the worst parts of our society glom onto really interesting works of literature.
Yeah.
Because they relate to the worst parts of it. And it's like, how do you write about something that's bad and not appeal
yeah.
to bad people?
Yeah.
And
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Because you're right. It's just absolutely heartbreaking to watch people not see the next sentence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where maybe when this was published... Yeah, I know when it was published, they didn't have the redemption arc, which admittedly is a little fast. It could have been, like, drawn out a little bit more and more meaningful.
I think the end is, like, it felt like he was done with writing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You ever read a book where you're just like, oh, they got tired.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is, the violence takes up the full part one.
Yes.
And then more violence in part two
because
during his
torture.
Cure.
Yeah.
And then part three is like two chapters.
Yeah.
Two or
and
three
it's
chapters.
Just like, and I met my friend and he said he had a baby and that sounded nice. So, okay. Like,
that's me now.
Yeah. Like, so it's a little bit unbelievable. It's a little bit uncanny with how quickly that Alex flips the switch. But he does.
But he does. And I do think that's the point of the story.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's. Yeah. It's a meaningless book without the switch flip.
Which is what's fucking crazy to me, that the movie is the story.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, I will say that the movie is very, it is nihilistic, but it's very funny.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of makes it, my critical view of it when I watch it is that it makes it feel like the flaw of the state and that the government is
gotcha.
Flawed. And it's like the fucking man is
yeah.
tinkering with people
yeah.
and then can't even do that right and doesn't really care.
Yeah. Which was
whether
totally
people
the 1970s zeitgeist of filmmaking. It's
definitely.
Just like it's always the man that's wrong and
mm-hmm.
the fault is never within like a singular person. Whereas,
which is true.
Yeah.
It's like the systematic like forces around
yeah.
us have more to do with the way people act than like
oh, absolutely.
Choices.
But it's hard because a lot of like 1970s media kind of glosses over the hopeful redemption arc like Alex makes, where he's just like, but I can choose to work outside the system.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you know? He does make the choice to be outside of the system, which is interesting that having a wife and child in the world of A Clockwork Orange is outside of the
That's
system.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
But it does seem almost rebellious
to be happy,
to choose to want something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's lovely.
Like, it's a really, technically, it's a very positive story.
Yeah, as long as you can stomach the fact that Burgess puts in some really, truly, like, reprehensible and heinous scenes.
Unnecessary.
I completely agree.
I think that, like, there is a scene where when he breaks into the house and, like, rapes the wife and beats up the writer.
Yeah.
That is in the... it's in the movie, but you don't really, it's just very artful and weird.
Yeah.
I don't think it's like very clear what's happening.
Yeah.
Everyone's wearing crazy costumes.
Yeah.
It's a strange kind of, the whole movie's sort of a fever dream vibe to it.
Gotcha.
I don't think it's as upsetting as it was for our parents because they had seen so much less.
Right.
It's not at all like Game of Thrones. Like, I can't watch Game of Thrones.
No,
it's too much.
Too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's of the time in that, like, The Exorcist isn't the scariest movie anymore.
No, it's not.
You know? And it's like,
I laughed the entire time that I watched
it. Yeah, like, there's a couple parts that, like, surprise, like, when she goes down the stairs, I was like, ew, like, that's gross.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's parts that are surprising, but it didn't, like, tear my world apart the way, like, Hereditary did.
You know what I mean? Like, people reportedly did when they saw it in the movie theater.
So I think, like, the boomer perspective around the movie isn't fresh anymore.
Right.
It totally makes sense.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't think most women would have a general problem necessarily.
Yeah.
If this interests you at all, I guess I'm saying that, like, it's very over the top.
Yeah.
It's almost like camp.
Oh, my gosh. It's just an incredibly interesting book that I was not expecting to actually, like, love as much as
I did. Oh, good. I'm so glad you loved it.
Yeah.
Because I felt kind of bad when I was reading it again because we are only friends online until today. And I was like, oh, no, I ruined a relationship that barely started.
No, but it also makes me really wonder about, like, Anthony Burgess, for me, is one of... I am not someone who's like, you have to separate the art from the artist. I can't do that.
Same.
As soon as I find out that someone's truly fucking terrible, I don't have to consume their work anymore.
Yeah, I feel the same.
And so I'm kind of at a point where it's like, Anthony Burgess is like, oh, yeah, of course I fantasized about, like, raping women and murdering them. And I'm like, wish you hadn't said that, buddy, because, like, now I don't know how I feel about the book, you know? So it's like, I think your story is fantastic.
Yeah.
But him talking about having, like, oh, I get to put, like, all of my violent fantasies into a novel, I'm like, I'm going to take a step back from this.
Yeah, I don't want to know that about anybody. I think if when you're just thinking, it's just thoughts, and lots of people have thoughts, and I don't want to know about them.
Yeah,
that's the
exactly.
thing. There's things I want to just stay private. And like, maybe you have really fucked up thoughts, but you're a lovely person in all other ways. Great.
Perfectly
I would just
fine.
Love to not know that because that makes me scared of you then.
Don't act on them. Like, and especially if you have the ultimate privilege of being a writer or someone who's creative who can make a world and say, like, this truly terrible thing happens, don't tell me that you're the one who wants to do it.
Yes, because then it's like, well, I don't think that you're creative anymore. I think that you're like a psycho who's barely holding on to living within society.
Yeah, and maybe I shouldn't give you more wealth and power by buying your book or going to
because it'll
to
make
movies.
It easier for you to enact that fantasy in reality.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, if I cannot, that's like the main reason, actually, like, why I'm not someone who is like, I love Woody Allen movies, I'm going to go paint. No.
No,
he's a
it's like,
fucking monster, and he got away with it because he's a fucking millionaire.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. And
simple.
Like, money is only going to continue to hide him.
Yeah, and it actually goes right back to the entire conversation that we were having of, like, you know, the more money and power that people are given,
the less choice you have to be good.
Yeah, exactly. You get to go into, like, your deepest, darkest, like, gross brain spaces, and you think that it's acceptable to do it because it was acceptable for a character to do it. And no, if it's on the page, I will accept someone acting like that. I will not accept someone acting like that in real life.
No, absolutely. And it's a shame, too, because I don't know. I don't think this book could be written now. I think it was
I don't think it could either.
It's, like, very much of the 60s and of, like, the working class, like, British society that like things are a little more like that here now, but like that was British society is like very different.
Yeah, because it is more of a caste system than America probably will let itself admit.
Yes. Yeah. No, I totally agree. And I think the more, the less intellectual thoughts around sexual assault and like, I think allowed it to go darker places than maybe writing would now. Yeah. And I think the fact that he's able to be so weird in the writing, like now I don't think a writer can make up a language and people would take it.
No, I hope not.
I think everyone would be like, come on, buddy.
Yeah, Tolkien did that. We don't have to go back.
We don't have to do it again. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
And so I love that that we have it because it's so fascinating. And like we started the podcast talking, I love the push and pull you have to do as the reader to be like, I want to create distance. And the book is like, no distance, no distance.
Exactly.
And I think that it's brilliant.
Yeah.
I think that this is a very good book. And the fact that he doesn't like it makes me not like him even more. Because I'm like, no, dude, this is good.
Yeah.
You idiot.
Oh, my gosh. On that note, why don't we start to wrap things up?
Okay, great.
How can people keep in touch with you?
Oh, yeah. I'm very active on our modern literary social media page, Twitter.
Yes.
So you can find me on all social media as LTB Comedy. That's my initials, Luce Tomlin Brenner. LTB Comedy on all of the things.
Wonderful.
And then I have a short horror comedy out right now called Messed Up that's doing the festival thing.
Awesome.
And so hopefully you can see that at a horror festival sometime.
That'll be fantastic.
And as always, you can keep in touch with Fuckboys of Literature on Twitter and Instagram at Fuckboys of Lit. That's B-O-I-S, or at fuckboysoflit.com. We love getting your feedback, so please do rate and review wherever you tune in. We'll be back next week with a whole new guest and story. I'm Emily Edwards, and I'll see you next time.
Crazy how good they are at writing satire and remaining humorless.
Yes.
Like...